Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is a delight to see so many of you here today and to greet those of you who are online or watching this as a recorded video. I want you to know I am Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my joy to serve this very loving congregation. Each one of you is welcome here. You are welcome here, no matter who you are, how you feel, what your past is. You're welcome here, no matter the color of your skin or the person that you love or your gender. You are welcome here. Whether you've been coming here for 50 years or just showed up here today for the very first time, you are all so very welcome here with us. It's now time for our chalice lighting. It's by Reverend Karen LeBlanc. This isn't just a place of worship. This isn't just a fellowship of like minds. This isn't just a Sunday morning filled with spirit and topped off with coffee and cookies. My daughter and I bought gluten-free brownies, so... This is our church, our congregation, where we are building beloved community, where we are opening ourselves to each other, where we trust and love rise and fall together. This is where we feel safe. This is where we know we are welcomed. This is where we belong. For this gift and so many others, we light our chalice. Let us say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors.
Good morning. My name is Scott Winters, and my pronouns are he and him. And it is my privilege to serve as your lay leader this morning. Our opening reading is by Kristen Grassel Schmidt. The Jewish New Year commemorates the creation of the world, the bringing forth of order where once there was only chaos, the birth of the building blocks of life. As Jews within and beyond these walls begin to celebrate Rosh Hashanah tonight, let us all celebrate. Let us marvel. Let us be awestruck. For the same force that brought our planet into being, the same force that evolved tiny atoms and molecules and DNA into intelligent life, the same power that transforms summer into autumn, and autumn into winter, that same power is still at work in the universe and in us, always bringing about new seasons, new creations, new possibilities. Breath of life, breathe in us, with us, and through us. This day, as we gather in one community, one in commitment to truth, love, and justice, open our minds and our hearts to the new that's always being created. Come, friends, let us celebrate. Let us marvel. Let us be filled with awe. Come, let us worship together. Please join me in singing Spirit of Life, number 123 in our gray hymnal.
I lost my place for a moment, everybody. Sorry. Okay, so we're going to have the story now, time for all ages. So if children want to come sit in the front seat, they are so welcome to do so, or you can stay with your families. So Our story this morning is called New Year at the Pier. It's a Rosh Hashanah story by April Halperin. And if you're not aware, Rosh Hashanah begins this week. It's part of the Jewish, it's the most important part. This week, High Holy Days, is one of the most important parts of the Jewish tradition. So, Izzy loves this changing time of year. Some days, sunglasses, some days, sweaters, apple, honey, the sound of the shofar, and his favorite part of Rosh Hashanah, Tashlik. Everyone makes I'm sorry lists before Tashlik. Mom is at the piano, patio table writing fast. Miriam is on the grass thinking. Izzy puts a rock on his paper so it won't blow away. He doesn't make a list. He draws pictures, but he does count on his fingers. 1, 2, 3. 3 things he's sorry for. What is Izzy sorry for? He sticks up one finger for drawing on Miriam's forehead while she was asleep. 2 fingers for losing his mom's ring at the grocery store. 3 fingers for breaking Miss Bickerson's drum. The old one they weren't supposed to touch. Is that it? Just think. Suddenly, Izzy remembers there's one more. Ugh. He wishes there weren't. He wishes he could forget this one. Slowly, he puts up 4 fingers for promising he wouldn't tell anyone that Ben sucks his thumb. And then telling. On Rosh Hashanah, as soon as they get to the synagogue, Izzy joins his friends playing tag. "You're it," a kid says, pointing a finger at Izzy. Izzy looks at his own finger. He runs over to his sister Miriam. He whispers, "I'm sorry I drew on your forehead." "Huh?" "I'm sorry I drew a space dog." "Oh, that's no big deal," she says. "Okay," he says, and runs off with his friend. When he stops to rest, Miriam looks at her list and then at Izzy. "I'm not going to call you a big snot anymore. I'm sorry." "I like being a big snot," he says, pulling a ribbon from her hair. "Izzy," Miriam says, and stomps on his foot. "Hey," Izzy yells. Mom walks up. "Peace, kids," she says, putting up 2 fingers. Izzy looks at his own 2 fingers. "This one's going to be harder." "Mom," Izzy says, looking at his shoe, "I'm sorry I lost your ring." "I know you're sorry, sweetie. Thanks. I'm sorry for something, too." His eyes get big. "Mom's sorry?" "I'm sorry for always being on the phone." Oh, wrong page, guys. Didn't work. Oh, I pressed the wrong button. "I'm sorry for always being on the phone," she says. "I'll try not to answer it when you and I are playing." Okie dokie. Mom squeezes his hand. He squeezes back. The doors open. It's time to take their seats. When services are over, everyone walks to the beach. At the top of the hill, Izzy counts 3 fingers, Miss Bickerson and her 2 dogs. As he looks at his 3 fingers, his heart pounds like her drum used to. But maybe he doesn't have to say it to her right now. Yes, he does. No, he doesn't. "Well, look who's here. Hello, Izzy," says Miss Bickerson. "Hi, Miss Bickerson," he mumbles. "Good heavens," Miss Bickerson cries as the dogs drag her up the street. "Sorry to be running off, dear. Come visit next week." Phew, Izzy runs down the hill to catch the others. When he gets to the pier, Rabbi Neil is saying, "Tashlik is the time we apologize for things we wish we hadn't done. Tashlik means to throw. We throw away things we don't like or don't need. Tashlik is like cleaning your heart's closet. A new year, a clean heart." Just this summer, Izzy and Miriam cleaned their toy closet and gave a lot away. Now it seems bigger. Sometimes he just opens the closet to see how clean it is. They all troop up the pier singing, Avenue Mahenu. The melody moves inside Izzy in a sad and happy way. He feels a part of the wind, a part of the waves, a part of everybody singing. Rabbi Neil blows the shofar. Now it's time. Mom hands them slices of old bread. Izzy rips off a piece and whispers, "This is for drawing a space dog on Miriam's forehead." He throws it into the water. "For Mom's ring," Izzy says, tossing another sorry into the sea. He breathes the salty air. He feels cleaner. Suddenly, Ben is right next to him. "Izzy, I'm sorry I never helped you find your yellow notebook." His notebook? That's right. Ben didn't help him look for it. Just hearing Ben say he's sorry makes Izzy feel better. "That's okay," he says. He smiles down at their four shoes side by side and remembers the fourth thing on the list. Oh, he has to tell Ben. Well, maybe he doesn't have to. Yes, he does. They sit together on the bench, looking out at sea. Ben is bouncy and hummy. Izzy is slouchy. Izzy takes a deep breath of ocean air. "Ben, I'm sorry I told your secret." "About sucking my thumb?" "Yeah, it was mean. I'm sorry." He wishes Ben would say something. Finally, Ben says, "Izzy, we've been friends for a long, 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 long time, right?" "Right. So because we've been friends for such a long, 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 long time, you are 100% forgiven." "Really?" He looks at Ben. Ben smiles. "Okay, and from now on, I promise to keep your secret secret. And I promise to help you look for everything you lose," Ben says. They toss pieces of bread out. Izzy's heart feels as big as the ocean. "But what about Miss Bickerson?" Izzy decides he will talk to her soon. He throws another piece into the sea for Miss Bickerson's drum. Ben and Izzy toss the last bits of bread into the wind. Izzy loves this changing time of year. Some days sunglasses, some days sweaters, the sound of the shofar and the salty smell of the sea. Time to think is about his family and this whole wide, windy world. Everyone sings one last song, then they slowly walk home, holding hands in a family and friends chain with empty bread bags and clean, wide open hearts. So today we have something very special that's going to happen in our congregation. We used to stand up, hold our hands across the aisles. Thank you, everyone. I'm here with you, for sure. We would hold hands across the aisles, and we would sing our children out. And we haven't done that since COVID began, and today we have many children, and we are going to sing them out. So,
as we reflect today on belonging to this beloved community, I know that WOOF holds a special place in your hearts. Our relationship here brings us lots of opportunities for friendship and socialization so that we don't feel as alone and as isolated in the world. These relationships we have here bring us nourishment when we need a helping hand and someone who cares. They bring us opportunities as well to help care for each other, to offer our hearts and skills in ways that can help strengthen our community. Our relationships also bring us learning, opportunities for growth, and new ways to look at ourselves and to be challenged and to be more vulnerable and honest. And that's just a start, for WOOF offers us opportunities to serve a broader community and world together. I know that we are ever grateful for all the early stewards of this land, beginning with the original peoples, the indigenous tribes, many of whom live among us and whom our doors are always open. WOOF exists because of the generous spirit and commitment of all those who came before us, just as our future health depends on the dedication and commitment of those of us here today. Please consider the gifts you have to offer, whether it be financial support or the special gift of your time or your talent. Know that we are grateful for your offering. Those of you who are here in person today and you'd like to give a financial donation, you can place it in the collection basket in the foyer after the service. And if you're watching on your screens, you'll see instructions on how to donate while Betsy plays our interlude. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
So now we enter a time of reflection on our lives, and we continue with gratitude. We continue with gratitude. What we are grateful for. I am grateful for the sun, for the fall air. I'm grateful for you, for belonging in this beautiful community, for the opportunity to give other people a space to belong. And I would like us all to take a moment, consider what you're grateful for, and perhaps if you're willing, call out into the space your gratitude. If you're at home, you can do it via chat or on text to someone, or just say it aloud to the room.
A reading by Naomi Shihab Nye. Gate 4A. After learning my flight was detained 4 hours, I heard the announcement. If anyone is in the vicinity of Gate 4A, understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate 4A was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing loudly. Help, said the flight service person. Talk to her. What is her problem? We told her the flight was going to be 4 hours late, and she did this. I put my arm around her and spoke to her haltingly. Shudawa, shubidak ha bibiti, stadi stadi shwe, min fadlik, sho bit siwi. The minute she heard any words she knew, probably poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought our flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for some major medical treatment the following day. I said, no, no, we're fine. You'll get there. Just late. Who is picking you up? Let's call him and tell him. We called her son, and I spoke with him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on the plane and would ride next to her. Southwest. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad. And he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, that they had 10 shared friends. And then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets that I know and let them chat with her? This all took up about 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, telling about her life, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade marmoule cookies, little powdered sugar, crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts out of her bag. and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the traveler from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There are no better cookies. And then the airline broke out the free beverages from the large, huge coolers. Non-alcoholic, and the two little girls from our flight, one African-American, one Mexican-American, ran around serving us all apple juice and lemonade, and they were covered with powdered sugar too. And I noticed my new best friend. By now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves. Such an old country traveling tradition. Always carry a plant. Always stay rooted to somewhere. And I looked around that gate of late and weary ones and thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not a single person in this gate, once the crying of confusion stopped, has seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies, and I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. A reading by Rosemary Wotola Tromer, after she told me the question she asks herself. All day, I replay these words. Is this the path of love? I think of them as I rise, as I wake my children, as I wash the dishes, as I drive too close behind the slow blue Subaru. Is this the path of love? Think of them as I stand in line at the grocery store. Think of them as I sit on the couch with my daughter. Amazing how quickly six words can become compass. The new lens through which I see myself in the world. I notice what the question is not. Not, is this right? Not, is this wrong? It just longs to know how the action of existence links us to the path of love. And is it this? Is this it? All day I let myself be led by the question. All day I let myself not be too certain of the answer. Is this it? I ask as I argue with my son. Is this it? I ask as I wait for the next word to come.
So I have been musing on many things this week. My personal life and the life of this congregation are in times of transition. I feel myself floating in liminal space, putting my foot down from time to time to feel if there is something solid yet, and pulling it back when I feel the slippery, sucking mud that doesn't quite hold me. There's nothing to do, I know, but wait to experience what will solidify beneath my feet. I've been thinking, though, that one thing that we can choose during liminal times, or any time actually, And that is one's orientation toward the day. I was trained, like probably many white middle-class Americans, that the point of the day was to get things done. I could have some choices about what ended up on my to-do list, like, for example, whether I had children, which has a lot of to-dos, or a yard, or pets, or what my work was. But once those things were decided, the most important thing I could do every day was get things done. My parents are extraordinary at getting things done. In their late 70s, they both still get a lot done every day. My mother taught me, quite young, the satisfaction of lists written in pencil and the pleasure of a firm, dark line through that completed item. But this current liminal space that we exist in seems to have cast a spell on my to-do list. No matter how I hack at it, each day it grows in size. While I'm searching for solid ground, many things are spinning without grounding, and they seem drawn to my to-do list, like a magnet. So I've decided that in this liminal time, that maybe it's time to divorce that get-things-done orientation toward the day and take up something a little more life-giving. I have considered be present to everything that happens, which is very good. I love as an orientationist. Today, I'm going to make somebody's day because it just feels so joyful. Or there is today, I'm going to notice beauty. Or today, I will feel creativity flowing through my body and act on it. But right now, what I've decided to experiment with, as the poet did in the reading, with orienting my day towards the path of love. That wildly out of control to-do list can just tag along behind me. This month, our theme is belonging. We are considering today what it means to be a community of care. We are also recognizing the truths of the Jewish High Holy Days that begin this week. During the High Holy Days, observant Jews review their lives. They ask for forgiveness and grant those forgiveness who ask for it, as we saw Izzy doing in this morning's story. These seem like issues for the path of love. And I'm wondering what it would mean if in this time we become, as we are ungrounded in this liminal space, also orienting ourselves always towards the path of love. In all of the things that we usually do. Because it's easy in congregational life just to get caught up in. We offer our aid, we go to worship, we have meetings, you know. But instead, orienting ourselves away from the to-dos towards the path of love. Belonging to other people is an absolutely foundational human need. We need other people. We cannot survive without them. Not being connected with others is, in fact, dangerous. Loneliness makes us at higher risk for early death than obesity, smoking, lack of exercise, and air pollution. It affects our mental health and our physical health in a lot of extremely negative ways. At the same time, between 22% and 40 to 46% of Americans, depending on the study, are lonely most of the time. Listen to that. 22% to 46% of Americans are lonely most of the time. And loneliness is the direct opposite of belonging. And this is utterly tragic in a country that prides itself on the highest standard of living in the world. I mean, you can have a lot of stuff, but when the day is done, why does it matter if between a quarter to half of all people are miserable with loneliness? Loneliness actually is not about being alone. People who spend a lot of time alone may not experience loneliness, and people who are surrounded by others may feel desperately alone. Loneliness is about how much is correlated with how much we can be who we truly are in a community and share what is happening in our lives. So we need to be able to be ourselves and share our true experiences of living. Jane Dutton studies high-quality connections. She defines connection as the dynamic living tissue. I love that. The dynamic living tissue that exists between two people when there is contact between them, involving some mutual interaction and social, mutual awareness and social interaction. The existence of some interaction means the individuals have affected one another in some way. Being affected by some one another in some way on a consistent basis, when that's positive, helps us feel as if we belong. Brené Brown, who has written extensively on belonging, says belonging is the intimate human desire to be part of something larger than us. Because this yearning is so primal, we often try to acquire it by fitting in and by seeking approval, which are not only hollow substitutes for belonging, but often barriers to it. Because true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world. Our sense of belonging can never be greater than our level of self-acceptance. When we try to fit in, even if we are surrounded by other people, we may feel lonely. If we can share our real selves with others, and if they accept us, we feel as if we truly belong. I believe it is the work of UU congregations to offer people the opportunity of true belonging. It is our calling to welcome people and let them know that they are beloved just as they are. I believe this is what communities of care are. They are communities where our differences, our brokenness, and our imperfection are accepted, and where no one is ignored, looked at in a weird ways, insulted, overly fawned over, or in other ways made to feel to know that they do not belong. And most of us know just how painful those things are. The farther away any of us are from that normative, ideal human of our culture, the white, straight, wealthy, tall, attractive, intelligent, emotionally subdued, married with children, cis male, the more likely we are to have felt non-belonging at some point in our lives. And really, even if a person manages to check all those boxes, and how many of those people really exist, there's likely something about them that they know doesn't belong. Our dominant culture is not very kind to anyone. Thus, we have developed the to-do list orientation. In a capitalist culture where the gross domestic product will only go up if we all just produce more and consume more, worthy often gets associated with doing something deemed productive. We can try to belong that way. Instead, Unitarian Universalists say that every person has worth and dignity just because they exist, just because they came to life on this beautiful planet. And we believe that everyone deserves compassion, that we all deserve peace and justice, and that we are interconnected. What we say is every person is worthy of love and care. And that includes every single one of you. Leaning into this truth, that is the path of love. Doesn't that all sound lovely? To belong with our whole selves, where people don't freak out if we have an idea that does not jive with the groupthink, where how we look at who we love, where how we look or who we love doesn't matter, and that nothing about us is seen as wrong, inappropriate, or a mistake, where when we flounder, someone helps us up. When we celebrate, someone is there to dance with us. When we have ideas, someone is there to discuss them. When we want to act on something, there's someone to act with us. This is what most of us really, truly want, to live encircled in communities that see us and care for us. But it's fraught, really, isn't it, this path of love? Let's not pretend that it's not. Because, honestly, there is always that person there, isn't there? The one who makes us uncomfortable, or the one who really does have very problematic ideas, or says things that hurt people, or who crosses boundaries. There is the path of love, and then we have to exist with real people. And let's be real, being in a community of care takes a lot of energy and time. The path of love is caring for others through smiles and hugs, offering food, listening, in so many other ways. The path of love is also caring for our communities so the communities are welcoming, caring, and loving places. One path is just showing up at places like WOOF for Sunday mornings or small groups. Sometimes we just show up because we want to, because it feels good for ourselves. But sometimes it's good to show up because other people need us. That's lifting our brother and sister and family and people up. That's what it looks like. Another path for caring for community, for creating caring communities, is like just making this community happen. Like making coffee, serving as somebody who greets at the door, creating worship, doing finances, teaching our children, and endless more possibilities. Or it could mean making our larger communities more caring and loving places by voting, cleaning up, knowing our neighbors, feeding the hungry, giving school supplies to students who cannot afford them, changing laws, and so many more things. And let's just tell the truth. Most of those things add to our to-do lists. And during this liminal time, especially in the late phases, as we are so hoping it's really the late phases of a pandemic, sometimes doing things, more things, anything, is just too much. Fatigue, trauma, grief, uncertainty, and fear are all very real. How can we be a community of care when more people need care than those who feel they can offer it? As I said, I have been musing on many things, and the central question that always is coming up for me is how do we love more, care more, create more belonging in the actual world with the selves that we are, surrounded by others who are just as they are, always working with that human desire towards control and power, and with so much to do. This is the question, I think, that we live our lives into. It's a question religious faiths have been attempting to live for millennia, with varying abilities to do that. In her poem, Nye offers an example of a moment on the path of love. Here, she simply responds to a woman in need. She did not worry that the woman was scary or crazy. She did not think about the collection of poetry due to editors, papers to grade, or phone calls to make. She did not decide she needed a nap to eat or meditate. Instead, she fell on her knees at the side of a wailing woman. a connection was made, a community of care and belonging created. Nye shows us what that was like. And I looked around the gate of late and weary ones and thought, this is the world I want to live in, the shared world. Not a single person in this gate, once the crying of confusion stopped, has seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women too. This can happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. In this story that she told, everybody belonged. That's the path of love. Another path of love is the practices of the Jewish High Holy Days, when people begin again with each other and with their lives. In the Jewish tradition, once a year, at the New Year, in the fall, Jewish people reflect on their lives, particularly on their relationships. They ask how they have harmed their relationships with themselves, with others, and God. They ask for forgiveness. And when others ask them for forgiveness, they are required to forgive. This morning, we heard a story about a young boy going through this process and his feelings of guilt, his anxiousness about asking for forgiveness, his relief when it happened, and the renewal of his relationships. His heart felt wide open. This is surely a practice for community's cares and one for the pathway of love. It is a way people lift each other up and don't fall down, like the song we sang this morning. It also brings up questions for other possible rituals and practices. One thing I love about the High Holy Days is how it is a community practice. It is not something that people decide to do on their own because they were in therapy or read a self-help book. Everyone does it, every year. Children learn to do this. The difficult challenge of how to ask and give forgiveness, they grow up learning this essential relationship skill in their community of love. So I ask us, as Unitarian Universalists who go to this congregation, how we might attend to our relationships differently if we want to be a congregation of true belonging. How might we make them a part of community practice? What are our practices to deal with the reality that some people make us uncomfortable, even when we feel terrible that that's happening? What are our practices for dealing with people who have really problematic and harmful ideas, say thoughtless and mean things, and cross our boundaries? Just because we want to be a congregation on the path of love that offers true belonging, it doesn't just happen because we want that. We actually have to wrestle with our discomfort. We have to realize that while every person has worth and dignity, all behaviors and all words are not okay. And there is a difference, and it can sometimes be really hard to navigate that difference. We also have to be people who, when we mess up, are able to forgive the other person. Ask for forgiveness and forgive ourselves so we can go forward into our lives and relationships. The question is, how do we actually help ourselves do that instead of just hoping it comes to pass? One of the ways UU congregations grapple with struggles that happen in communities and in our community is through our covenant with each other. A short version of our covenant reads, "We covenant to take responsibility for our feelings, behaviors, and communication, and to maintain civility and compassion in the face of differences, assume good intentions but recognize impact, acknowledge that we all make mistakes and be generous with apology, forgiveness, and gratitude. We covenant to strengthen our community by being generous with our time, talent, energy, and resources, as well as being informed and engaged in WWF's governance. We covenant to encourage each other's personal growth and to honor WWF's practices of democracy, shared ministry, and collaborative leadership. We have a covenant so that it is possible to know what we expect of ourselves in a community of true belonging on the path of love. We say we hold each other accountable to this covenant, but I wonder if that's really true, because we have really no practices of covenant. We don't pull it out and read it and ask ourselves how we have lived and failed it once a year and share that with others. We take up the parts we like, but less often the parts we don't. When there are conflicts, we don't have agreed upon ways to work through it and live back into covenant. I admire the High Holy Days because they just admit up front that everyone is going to fail at being the person they want to be. That's just how it is. And so every year they say, okay, you failed this year, so let's try to like reset things. Let's restart. We need a repair plan. It's just part of the existence of being human. And I agree. Being on the path of love requires a lot of repair. As I am floating in these liminal times with my multiplying to-do list and possibilities popping up everywhere that just want to be added, doing it all is simply impossible. There are not enough hours in the day. There's not enough energy in my body. But I want to recognize the truth of that first hymn we sang this morning, that when we lift each other up, we don't fall down. Those moments at gate A4 beckoned to me, when a terrifying loneliness descended on a stranger. The people, weary, anxious themselves, did not splinter, but instead became a community marked with powdered sugar. They followed that path of love. The story of Izzy doing the painful work of asking for forgiveness beckons to me. He and his community followed the path of love. In these stories, and a deep truth often forgotten by Americans who are really focused on individualism, is that if we lift each other up, we ourselves don't fall down. So I'm asking myself and you, what does the path of love mean for us right now, for each of us, for us as a community? Life and energy right now are bubbling up in this congregation in new ways. It's so exciting. There was a successful workshop of our music program yesterday, and 19 people came to think about how to really make our music program more meaningful for all of us. And we have more people interested in chalice circles than we have in the last couple of years. Young families are coming to be together in community and celebrate together. People are flowing through our doors on Sunday mornings. The ground is not solid, but the energy of creativity and love are everywhere. And so how do we use that energy? What will it create? What I am hoping is for our congregation that it helps each of us know that we are lovable and we belong. And I'm hoping it helps each of us become the people who follow a path of love and can fall on our knees at the side of a hurting person and for someone, people who can ask for forgiveness and create for each other communities of care. I hope we can each learn to lean on each other. Our benediction is from Burton Carley. Cheered on by our community, blessed by our covenant, uplifted in mind and renewed in spirit, go forth with courage and peace to meet all of your days. I extinguish the flame, or Scott does, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you all.